Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
The High Noon El Prez Pack is here, featuring my top four High Noon Vodka Seltzer flavors. These flavors include passion fruit, pineapple, pear, an all-new flavor, tangerine, all made with real vodka, real juice. This 12-pack is only here for a limited time, so get it while you can. Just look for the pack with my face on it. You can even scan the QR code in the pack and have me virtually join your party. Visit highnoonspirits.com to find the El Prez Pack nearest you.
My objective in doing this is to help bring a championship to New England.
I'm thrilled to be part of this organization and to be able to have the opportunity to lead this team.
Tom Brady gets his first career start in the National Football League at quarterback.
That's Vinatieri's luck from this distance of late. This is the Patriots' season on the line. The kick is away. It is!
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for each of you. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards, only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Well, as we're recording this, we've had a few days now to process what we saw on Saturday night, that colossal plane crash, upside down, burning with the engines falling off, air disaster that was the game of Buffalo. But you know what? With time comes wisdom. And you know what, Nick? I really try not to use this word because it's so overused and it's so trite. But with the little perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Now that you've had a little cooling off period, are you feeling a little bit better than you were when you went to bed Saturday night?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it still sucks. 20 years of my life, we never been kicked out of the first round. Actually, I take that back. We have.
Yeah, the 2019, Tennessee came to town. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this was the polar opposite. Couldn't score points. This time they couldn't make a stop, but same result. It's still a gigantic L.
But it sucks, obviously. But looking forward, I mean, the Patriots are back. It was always the Patriots, and we're going into next season. And what we accomplished this season is unbelievable, and we're far beyond the years of rebuilding that every other team has faced for 30, 40 plus years.
Well, and the reason you and I constructed this little technological marvel we call Do Your Pod was because we figured this is going to be a really special season. It's going to be one unlike any that we've dealt with. Everything was up in the air. Everything was a mystery. And I wanted to get together, me and you, every week with a different guest to chronicle it all. And it did not disappoint.
Not at all.
Except for the end. But we've got a great guest to talk about it with, and this is NBC Sports Boston's Phil Perry, one of the best guys covering the Patriots. He's insightful. Absolutely. He's interesting. Also a very good guy, and I thought we had a great discussion with him.
I thought fantastic. It
really put a lot in perspective. And stick around after Phil, because we struck the mother load of voicemails, and they were surprisingly and life-affirmingly positive, I think, given what we just dealt with. So it was great to have that many people invested in the show. Appreciate everyone. If you could give us a rating, like, share, and subscribe. Do what you need to do to promote this, so that we'll figure out going forward what our plan is. But for now, it was this is a great way to cap off the season. Am I saying too much?
We had a hell of a run, 20 episodes.
Damn. All right. And many more to come.
That's right.
Right. As we go forward and start chronicling all the Mac Jones banners yet to come. So
that's right.
Good. He's Nick Fasoli. I'm Jerry Thornton. Here's our guest, Phil Perry. Let's roll tape. Well, I want to first of all congratulate you, Phil Perry, because, you know, the first episode of this we had your colleague, Tommy Curran, on. And so we got to talk to him before the season began. It was a time of hope and optimism and beautiful weather. And now we get to bring you in after this this football Fukushima. So you can throw on a hazmat suit, help us clean up the meltdown of this. And we can get into big picture, but your reaction to the game and what the source of that utter debacle was.
I wish I could tell you, Jerry. I think they wish they could tell you. It's really interesting talking to some of the players earlier this week and hearing them reference things like, you know, their mentality and that maybe the effort wasn't quite where it needed to be. And not that it was totally gone or evaporated, but it didn't ratchet up to where they thought they needed it to be down the stretch. I don't know. It's hard to find anything to really grasp onto, to be honest. I thought towards the end of the regular season, you tell me, you know, what you thought. I felt like the end of the regular season was almost entirely self-inflicted stuff. You know, Josh Allen had a great game in that second game at Gillette Stadium, but that loss in Indy, blocked punt, offsides on a field goal, let him kick it again, interceptions, turnovers, the Miami game, same sort of stuff. And then the playoff game just felt like they were totally outclassed. Like, yeah, they made mistakes and they had self-inflicted wounds in that game too, but that one, they just really didn't have the horses. So I felt like it was almost two different problems at the end of the year. How did you look at this, though? Because I'm sure you were riding the wave and it was impacting you as much as it was anybody else.
Oh, yeah. They didn't have those moments of utter frustration where you're screaming at the screen because Lawrence Guy, who's a gamer, just decides to randomly like line up, head up on the center. And while Matt Judon is telling them to move and you give them a do-over, whatever, it wasn't that. The Buffalo game, both Buffalo games really looked to me as it wasn't about mental approach. It wasn't about scheme. I think they're just outclassed athletically, which is a problem, particularly on defense. I keep going back to that bomb that was completed over Jawan Williams. And it was nothing fancy about it. There were just two vertical routes, and the post safety covers the inside guy and left Jawan Williams all alone. And, you know, Allen, you knew from before the snap, knew, okay, this is a touchdown, and delivered a perfect ball. And I don't know that there's anything you can do schematically to stop that when you don't have guys who can keep up with receivers.
I think the secondary depth was something that was sort of lurking as something that could be their undoing all year long. And it just never happened, which, you know, credit to Jalen Mills, somebody who I killed all camp because I felt like he wasn't very good. And I thought it was going to be a disaster to have to start that guy on the outside as your number two guy all year long. That's not even why they hired him. He was supposed to be sort of a jack of all trades. He ends up in that spot and they end up just fine. I mean, it wasn't like he had a great season, but they survived with him clearly out there. They ended up as a top five defense in a lot of different categories. So that eventually caught up with them, though. Trading Gilmore, losing Jonathan Jones, you know, Miles Bryant, as much as I like him and I think he might end up being a player, you know, he didn't make the team out of camp, Jerry, and he's a practice squad guy. And then they've got two more practice squad guys that are playing real snaps in a playoff game at the end of the year. I mean, against an offense like that one that is so built on the passing game and they loaded up on receivers to help Josh Allen, you can't keep up with what they had personnel wise. So, you know, now we're all looking at it and it's, you know, it's panic in the moment, right, for Patriots fans. But now it feels like there's this residual panic of, well, how do you get this fit? They can't possibly fix all this in one offseason, can they? They just spent all their money. They don't really have any money to spend this offseason. And you've got guys that are good players that are scheduled to leave. So I think there's a, and this sort of tends to be how a lot of folks, I feel like, in our area experience their teams in general. But I think there is a lot of concern, even though there's certainly with Mac Jones and some other different parts of the team, there are parts of this team that you can look at and feel good about moving forward. Mm-hmm. I think big picture, there's still a lot of questions in terms of how you can kind of put the pieces back together to compete with the Bills. How do you think you'd be saying that anytime, Jerry?
No, I mean, the Bills had themselves convinced that they were at the beginning of a 10-year reign. And it certainly wasn't looking like that after the game and the category 5 wins or whatever. Just like, okay, well, the Patriots are still big and physical enough to dominate you. And now I just think right now, as these teams are currently constituted, the Pats can go out and have another top 3 defense next year again, because you can scheme stuff up over a 18-week, 17-game season. But until they solve the Buffalo problem, which I think we can shorthand as the Josh Allen problem, mm-hmm. that they're never going to see another home game in the playoffs. And, you know, you mentioned Miles Bryant. I don't want to put too much on his shoulders. He's a depth guy, but they relied on him in a major role. And if I'm Isaiah McKenzie's agent and I see Bryant on the field next year, like, I'm putting a down payment on that boat that I was thinking about buying, because he's going to hit all the incentive clauses. And this guy who did nothing against anybody just tormented the Patriots for 2 games.
It's unbelievable. And he's a free agent. And our guy, our buddy Mike Giardi, was on with us last night. He said, hey, that might be, a relatively low cost option for the Patriots. And I agree. Wouldn't be a bad guy for them to try to go after. But if I'm his agent, I might be looking for a deal with like the Dolphins or even the Jets, just so you might have the opportunity to see Miles Bryant twice a year for the next 4 years. It's a difficult spot for them to be in, because I think they, like you said, for the vast majority of the season, you can scheme things up and you can put up some really good numbers against certain teams. But that was the other thing. And I sort of left out, okay, so they shoot themselves in the foot the last month of the regular season. They get totally outclassed talent wise in that wild card game. The other thing that happened and looms over all of those is that they just started playing better teams, Jerry. And that's how I felt at the end of the year, was that I had kind of been duped. I'd been a little bit duped by the run that they were on. And when they're the first seed in the AFC after beating Buffalo, man, I was sold on their toughness and their ability to not lose games themselves and not turn it over. Their turnover differential was great. It still ended up pretty good by the end of the year. They were still a top 10 team in that regard. And at the end of the season, it was like a lot of those things just went up in smoke. And so I think we can look at it now. Even Bill Belichick, his final press conference with us, or his conference call with us, he basically said, and I thought it was some real candor on his part for him to say, I'm paraphrasing now, but it was essentially, did we just have one bad night, or is that who we are? And I think a lot of us that watch this team really closely are still wondering the same thing. Are they that team? Are they actually that team that we saw at the end of the year in the playoffs when they played some good teams? Or are they the team that put up 50 on the Jets and the Jaguars? Odds are they're somewhere in the middle, right? I think it's just a question of side they're leaning more toward as they look at 2022.
Well, it's hard not to look back at the game against Tampa, when they were still figuring out who they are. And usually the first month of the season is kind of an extension of training camp here, because everything they do is more complicated and gets more complicated as they go. And you hit week 4 and you're saying, but feel pretty good about this. Like, look at what they did. I don't know that anybody did a job on Tampa that they did. Well, I guess the Jets game, they picked off Brady a bunch of times, but I felt great about it. If you had told me then that they'd be utterly helpless against Buffalo twice, that they couldn't make a stop against Miami of all people, and that they would just get bullied by the Colts, I would have been stunned. And so I guess we look at the front 7 and say, are they lacking athletes there? I mean, everybody's got Dante Hightower in their crosshairs right now, but a guy whose skill set is kind of between the tackles, big body thumper, who's utterly helpless when it's Josh Allen or even Tua. And so do they have to revamp that in addition to the secondary?
I think there are going to be a lot of places that you look to just upgrade athletically. But I say that now, Jerry, it's easy for us to say that now, just a few days after losing that game.
Right.
And where the team speed looked like it wasn't sufficient. Bill Belichick's been building this defense, you know, essentially the same way for a long, long time. And he's adapted and he's grown and he's changed. And you know, he has molded his scheme to the players that he has, you know, the big nickel package this year. And they've used it before, but, you know, they really leaned on it this year because three of his best players happen to be safeties. So that's something that he can do. But he has certain prototypes that he wants. And I'm not sure those are going to change. I think he looks at those positions and says, we need certain things out of those guys. He knows Dante Hightower's best role isn't to be in coverage snap after snap after snap.
Right.
This is the same. This is how the defense was built in 2016 and 2018, and offenses across the NFL are exploding, and the Patriots are drafting, you know, Juwan Bentley, who played at 260 pounds in college, and he was off teams' boards, undraftable, because he's too big. He wasn't athletic enough. Bill said, I don't care. That's what I want. I actually like those guys. Brandon Spikes, remember him? But yeah, that's who I want. I'm going to invest in those players. So I think it's easy for us to say that they're going to change how they do business on that side of the ball, but I'm not sure they're actually going to. Okay. I think they're going to use, you know, they're going to stick with the big bodies, and instead of putting them in coverage, use them to do what they do best. So if it's a passing situation, they're on the field, enter them into the pass rush, right? Like Kyle Van Noy and Dante Hightower, I think in 2018, they blitzed more than any linebacker, off the ball linebacker in football. It's because Bill doesn't want them necessarily in coverage. They have value to Bill, but if it's a passing down, he knows that's not their thing. He'd rather use safeties on backs. He'd rather use safeties on tight ends. But they got put in a weird spot, I think, against the Bills because they were down personnel-wise and because they were kind of flipping back and forth between man and zone. Nothing was working. And so they were trying to figure out a way to get pass rush. They couldn't do that. When they tried to put too many bodies into the pass rush or sacrificing bodies and cover, it was just, I don't know about you, Jerry, but what Josh Allen did in that game to me almost elevated him to like the elite level quarterback. I only say almost because he's still kind of inconsistent, but do you view him as like this untamable beast now moving forward, or is he still inconsistent enough for you that you look at it and say, well, if you just get Josh Allen on a couple of down days, you got a shot to be back in the driver's seat in this division?
Oh, there's a ton of recency bias going on here right now. You know what I mean? Like I saw him.
I'm guilty of it too.
Yeah. There's been one possession they've had in the last two games against New England where the Pats made a stop, and it was a turnover on downs. And so, you know, when
of a drop in the end zone.
Oh my God. I forgot about that. Okay. Yeah. When their punter doesn't need to throw his uniform in the hamper after the last two games, he can just like throw a little Febreze on it and put it back in his locker room. Then yeah, I'm going to look at Josh Allen as like he's arrived. He's this larger than life figure. And yeah, I think he's still capable of being forced into really dumb mistakes, but those are getting reduced all the time just by the sheer athleticism. I mean, you know, the second game against Buffalo, Christian Barmore had, he got credit for six pressures. You didn't even notice them because every time they got in his face, he was throwing one of those across his body, middle of the field throws, and finding somebody in the middle hole. So right now, I just think the entire division rests on their finding people with the athleticism to stop him. And I don't know if they're on the roster, which brings me to this might be a little bit obscure, but they've drafted a lot of linebackers in the last few years. 2 years ago, it was Anthony Jennings. He hasn't seen the field for them. This past year was Ronnie Perkins, right, in the third. And then late, they got the kid McGrone from
Cam.
Michigan.
Yep.
Cam McGrone. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, was highly valued, but then blew out his knee, I think. And so they redshirted him. Do you know enough about these guys to think, okay, there's the influx of, you know, sideline to sideline talent that they need somewhere in that mix?
I think McGrone could be that guy. He is a good athlete. He's explosive. He's not necessarily that huge, like, you know, I say huge. It used to be the standard, the 250-pound linebacker, right? The Ted Johnsons of the world. I get, you know, I get to work with that guy every week and have him throw me around. And now, you know, he would be, we've talked about this. I don't know where he'd probably be a first and second down linebacker in the league now, but he'd have to play for Bill, you know, like, like, I don't know if there's another defense out there that would take a Ted Johnson right now. So McGrone is a little bit smaller, a little bit more athletic. Perkins is actually more of an outside linebacker. They have this real glut of outside linebackers now that are relatively young that don't have a clear role on this team, Jerry. I mean, it's, you know, you've got Judon and Van Noy's under contract for next year. But then you had Winovich, who was inactive the other night.
Yep.
Uche, who's hardly played, even though he's healthy down the stretch. And then Ronnie Perkins plays the same position. So, you know, I don't know. Are they going to move on from Winovich? That wouldn't shock me, I guess, if they could somehow figure out a way to get some value back for him. But I don't know what you'd be getting for a guy like that. It just feels like they've overloaded there. And Jennings is more of their traditional bigger, heavier, not super athletic, but smart, off the ball linebacker. And he's pretty versatile too. They could play him on the edge too. And in his rookie year, he almost split 50-50 his snaps on the line and off. But I don't know what the long-term plan is for him either. So it's going to be really difficult for them to try to solve all of this in one off season. I'm not sure it's possible, Jerry, especially with, and we don't have to get into the weeds of free agency and the finances involved and all that, but they don't have much money. So if you're hoping they can trade for talent that costs money or buy talent in free agency and keep JC Jackson and, you know, keep, whether it's Devin McCourty or James White or, you know, some of these other free agents that Trent Brown that are valuable pieces to this roster, as we know it right now, you're going to have to make some difficult decisions and you might have some difficult releases to just try to clear up enough space just to maintain, never mind improve. So I think to me, it's another huge draft year. You know, because I think they're going to need several more. They got several this past year, so good for them. They're going to need several more young, cheap contributors in the draft this spring, in my opinion.
Yeah, you've really brought the room down. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry, Jerry.
Thanks a lot, Perry. No, I don't need your reality getting in the way of me trying to feel good about the, you know, as
you got a quarterback.
The wreckage of
you
this.
Got a quarterback, Jerry. What'd you think of the quarterback the other night?
You know what? Not an issue. You know what I mean?
Right.
He moved the ball to the extent he can. You had a great interception, great athletic play against him on a ball that maybe was a half a step underthrown. But, okay, I'm willing to accept. As a matter of fact, as you and I are talking, I'm in the middle of writing a blog about just all the things that the veterans on this team are saying about Jones. You know, from Matthew Slater to Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, guys who we thought, you know, some of them we thought were going to retire. Brandon Bolden, he's excited to come back. And to a person, they're all saying how good they feel about him. And all you had to do was Monday night watch Kyler Murray to know that that's a guy who the game, the moment was too big for him. And I mean, emotionally, I'm not making a short joke, but I'll let the internet do that.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know,
he
went into panic mode and that never happened with Jones. And my hope is that he's going to take, you know, even a more elevated kind of leadership role. Kendrick Bourne said, oh, he'll get in my face. And I'm, you know, about a mistake I made or whatever. I'm all about it, you know, because it's all about team goals. Let do that. And guys want to be led. And I think he'll have even a more moral authority, if you will, to lead them and kick some ass. And I think he's equipped for it. That's a total, if they had the same record this year with 2020 Cam Newton under center, I wouldn't feel nearly as good about this year. I think it was an illusion and they have a problem going forward, but are you with me that they've at least checked the box with Jones and got the major piece that they need?
No doubt. And I think maybe the most positive thing for Patriots fans to have taken away from this year in terms of things we've learned, I think it's Jones, but specifically his demeanor and his approach and his impact on his teammates, because some of the things we knew about him coming into the season, I'm not sure I knew how accurate he would be. He really all year long was among the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. So he was ahead of schedule on that as far as I was concerned, but we knew he was accurate and we knew he was smart and we knew he had an okay arm, but not a great arm. And we knew he was not a great athlete. So like physically, I'm not sure how much we learned about him, but we did learn he was, you know, this, I guess, checks a couple of physical boxes, tough and durable and character off the charts. And that was something that, you know, you could talk to as many people as you wanted who knew him back at Alabama or even before, or people who got to know him during the draft process. And people loved him in those settings. But until you see it day to day, week to week as a starting quarterback for an NFL team, it's hard to know how teammates are going to respond to you. And do you have that hard to discern factor where you are getting the respect from your teammates? And he clearly has passed that test with flying colors. So I think he's going to take a leap. I think that year one to year two leap is real, especially for quarterbacks. I think he's got a little bit more there physically than a lot of people. I think there's some, I really think, Jerry, that picture of him with the cigar and the shirt off has colored people's opinions of him forever. Because to me, what he did this year is not all that different from what Joe Burrow did last year. And nobody was saying about Joe Burrow last year, well, he's clearly not good enough and he's not going to be able to compete with the best of the best in the AFC. And look at Joe Burrow now. Add some pieces around him. The Patriots are going to have to do that too for Mac Jones. Help him out as much as you can and then watch him go to work. And Joe Burrow's no great athlete. Joe Burrow doesn't have a cannon for an arm. He's accurate. He's tough. He's confident. He does a lot of the same things that Mac Jones does. He's smart. I don't know if Mac Jones would be sniffing the MVP conversation the way Joe Burrow is this year, because they're probably not going to be able to add a Ja'Marr Chase. But if you can add some talent around him, I don't know why you couldn't be Mac Jones sort of sniffing top 10 quarterback in the NFL territory. To me right now, he's somewhere around 14, 15. So he should get better next year and they should add around him to help him get better. And that to me is the biggest thing to hang your hat on as Patriots fans. You have that position figured out and that has to make you feel good to some extent, even though we're sifting through the wreckage of a very disappointing end to 2021.
Here. Oh yeah. No, 100%, Phil. Like you can go to a guy's pro day and watch him throw the route tree. You can have him at the combine and measure his measurables and how big his hand is. And you can interview him and try to look into his soul or whatever. But the X factor always remains, you know, what happens when the bullet's alive. And yeah, he made it through a 17, 18 game NFL season. He never once was taken off the field for ineffectiveness or injury. And I always felt like, you know, when people criticized how much talent he had around him in Alabama, I'm like, that to me is a positive, because he was able to command a huddle filled with alphas, you know, filled with future NFL talent. And there's a lot to be said for that. You know, when you're 23 and, you know, you're barking commands at, you know, a Hunter Henry or whatever, how will they respond? And he had experience doing that. So I'm all about it. Now, I'm glad you mentioned the wideouts thing. I'm not a huge wide receiver one guy. I've never been like, oh, you got to get that guy to stretch the field and take the top off a defense. And yet, because for 20 years, I watched a quarterback win championships without those guys. You know, it was always a Chris Hogan, a Danny Amendola, Troy Brown, you know, Deion Branch was really the best great receiver these guys had, who was a high draft pick. He was, he was a second rounder. But now I feel like until they get that guy, you mentioned Ja'Marr Chase, that kind of addition, who's going to make coordinators have to account for him. They don't have that guy right now. That you absolutely have to solve that problem, and then if let it create other problems in the secondary. Are you with me on that, or could they continue to roll out the crew that they have and expect Jones to win with them?
Well, they were an efficient offense this year, right? I mean, they're near the top of the league in terms of points scored for the vast majority of the season. I haven't probably checked it in 2 or 3 weeks, but their explosive play rate was really high. They actually led the league in explosive play rate. Now, a lot of those are catch and run plays. A lot of those are screens that go for 20 yards or more, but they were pretty efficient throughout the course of the year with the approach that they had. So I think they can continue to win that way. And it wouldn't shock me if Bill Belichick said, hey, we just couldn't stop Josh Allen for two straight games. If you think we're adding to the offense first thing in free agency or in the draft, you're cuckoo. We got to figure out that side of the ball. We're okay offensively. We've got an offense. We've got the core of our offensive line. We've got the quarterback. We've got a running game. The receivers they have are, you know, Jacoby Myers will have to be brought back on a restricted free agent deal, but that's low money. And you could run it back essentially with the same group and you should be okay. Maybe even a little bit better because they get more used to each other and Mac Jones improves and the chemistry gets better and all that. But I hesitate because when you look at the teams that are still left, Jerry, especially in this conference, they're all just kind of getting by on defense. The teams that are the best teams are the elite teams offensively. So could you come back next year and have a good offensive team? Yes. But are you elite? Are you good enough to run with the Chiefs, run with the Bills, run with the Bengals on the scoreboard? Because those teams, they're just okay. You know, if you look at DVOA and they're, you know, I think there are positives and negatives to every metric, right? But DVOA is pretty widely used. The Patriots are number four defense in DVOA this year. The Bills were number one. So, okay, maybe take them off the list. But the Bengals were 19th. The Chiefs, I think, were 24th. They're just getting by. And their offense is clearly carrying them. So that's why I look at all the holes defensively and I'm almost like, well, if you can't get it all figured out this offseason, why not just go and get a receiver at the end of the first round and see if you could turn Mac Jones into a Pro Bowl quarterback and see if that's enough. That to me would not be a bad approach. I know it might make Bill Belichick unhappy because he wants his defense to be among the best of the best, but I think it's going to be really hard to do that in one off season. Whereas if you give him one playmaker on the offensive side, you could take such a significant leap on that side that it kind of keeps you in contention with these other teams.
God, I can't believe that I'm feeling this one. Like I agree with everything you're saying. It's just, I've been so like conditioned to not care about wide receiver. And you look at the history of the first round and it's just littered with utter failures at that position. It's just a hard thing to project. And I mean, you know, let us never forget that DK Metcalf, who broke the combine, was the 64th pick. Like he was, the Patriots passed him over. Everybody passed him over once. And like, I would give anything to get him right now.
Let me ask you this, as far as that position goes, because you mentioned Edelman and Amendola and Troy Brown, would you rather the true slot? Cause Jacoby Myers has been good in the slot, but he's not, you know, he's not that kind of guy. He's not the get open quickly guy. He's almost more of like a vertical route running, not stretch the field, but he's more of like a developing route runner from the slot. Unlike, you know, Welker, who could get open, you know, a yard and a half from the line of scrimmage, no problem. Right. So would you rather see that guy like the true slot and then figure out another spot for Jacoby Myers? Or would you rather go for that, you know, big outside the numbers, one-on-one, throw him a jump ball type of
play? You know, now that we're a few days removed from that game, I'm more open to the idea of another Welker, Edelman type. Mm-hmm. But in the aftermath of that, watching like time and again, and this has happened a lot down the stretch, where they'd complete a ball to somebody and a defender is right on them because they're playing top down and you know, no yards after the catch because they're not worried about the deep ball. My immediate thought was, okay, no, we need, you know, that Jamar Chase guy, you know, to just throw it up and he's going to win those battles. But yeah, listen, I've seen too many guys here get 1,000-yard seasons because they were really good in space and moving the chains. And so, yeah, if you could get me 2007 to 2009 Wes Welker, I think I'd take that. But
yeah,
because this is still the same offense and we've got a hyper accurate quarterback who maybe doesn't have, you know, the biggest arm in the world. So, but will that help you compete with Kansas City and Buffalo and in a perfect world, Green Bay or Tampa?
Right. Right. I mean, it could, right. Cause if you're just moving the chains constantly, you know, that works too. That's a, you know, and that actually chews up some clock, which, you know, Bill Belichick loves, as opposed to, you know, scoring on one play and get your defense back on the field. I think honestly, it wouldn't be a bad idea to look for both you know, and I don't know how highly you invest in either one. Usually those slot receivers, you don't have to draft all that highly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one guy, Elijah Moore, who's now the Jets, who was going to be a second round pick, you know, if not a late first, all off season long. Everybody knew it. You know, okay, for somebody with that kind of physical ability, you might have to invest early. But Slade Bolden, the slot receiver for Alabama right now, you know, you could get him pretty late probably in the draft. And then maybe, you know, you figure out another way to get your bigger guy on the outside. I just think Nelson Agholor, to me, was a little bit of a disappointment. He wasn't quite on the Jonnu Smith level of disappointment, Jerry, but to get 37 catches, I think is what it was from him. Curran, you know, compared to Philip Dorsett at one point in time, you know, like that's a lot of money for a Philip Dorsett type of impact. Right. So that, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they're looking to upgrade there.
You know, you just struck a nerve in Nick Fasoli by one of the guys you just mentioned. Nick, are you chiming in here with your weekly question about your guy?
What do you got, Nick?
I got to ask you, Phil. I've asked every single guest we've had on this podcast their thoughts about Jonnu Smith. You kind of just went into it. Obviously, year one of Jonnu, he was unbelievable before he came to New England, and now he almost looks like he took a vacation year. But what are your thoughts going into season two? I think hopefully he comes out of the weeds and we're going to see more double tight end sets with more passing instead of him running or semi-run blocking, but I don't know.
It's shocking, isn't it, that he essentially turned into like Daniel Graham basically by the end of the year, you know, who he was a total non-factor in the passing game. You know, they use him as a run blocker and he can move and he can, you know, he's a good athlete down the field at the line of scrimmage. I thought it was interesting a few weeks ago, Nick, Josh McDaniels called it a foundational year for Jonnu Smith. I said, uh-oh. that's a nice way of putting it, but he's essentially saying there without saying it, he's still picking things up. He's still trying to get comfortable. And I think for the next however many years, he will always be there for the Patriots. And maybe they won't do it while he's still on the roster. But if there's ever a case to be made that a guy probably could have benefited from showing up to the optional spring workouts, it would have been him.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And the one camp that he did come to, he had to go to, was mandatory mini camp. He got hurt basically the first 5 minutes of the first practice. So he essentially, the entire spring was a wash. And it was like he never caught up. And to me, the disappointing thing for him is he's a good athlete. They had to scheme everything up just to get his hands on the football. And when they tried to throw it to him down the field, he looked lost. And I don't know if he needs a new set of prescription contacts. He needs some LASIK surgery, or it was like he couldn't track the football. You would see him sort of trying to, and then having to backpedal and then having the thing still sail 5 yards over his head. You know, we all remember the pick six against the Saints early that season, but I think that was just the most glaring of what was an issue all year long, which was he's uncomfortable being thrown the football down the field. And yeah, you're really limited in what you can do with a guy when that's the case. And I don't know how you get more comfortable, if it's just reps or what, but I think eventually they said, well, we clearly can't trust him as a down the field passing option. So if we want to get it into his hands, because he's a good athlete, it's got to be on a handoff or a screen, right? I mean, all of his catches essentially at the end of the year were little like tear screens or bubble screens, or so he's got a lot of work. He's not going anywhere, Nick. You know,
no, I know. Trust me, I know.
It sounds like you were high on him before the season started, like a lot of us were.
Yeah.
And in
recent weeks as well. He just keeps waiting for that breakout.
Waiting for the pop. And, yeah.
He popped out for the Titans game. That's all I gotta say. He came out a little bit, and then it was like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, he became Cordarrelle Patterson, basically, only with one jet sweep a game that went for 3 yards. Like, it was always on a first and 10, he'd get 3 yards. And you're like, all right, well, take the rest of the day off.
You know what?
Who's the tight end that they had, the second tight end they had opposite Gronk for a couple of years when they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl? He'd come out of Indy. I'm flaking on his name. But he was literally going.
Oh, Dwayne Allen.
Dwayne Allen. He was getting, like, two catches a season, and it was astonishing. Like, nobody can make a tight end appear or disappear the way the McOffense can.
Oh, you know what though, you just brought up an interesting name, Patterson. they do have these hybrid players are everywhere now, right? Like Deebo Samuel, who is a stud. And
unbelievable.
Johnny Smith can be Deebo Samuel. But they manufacture touches for him. It's mm-hmm. it's screens, it's short passes into the flat, let him run with it. It's handoffs, it's pitches. I mean, Johnny Smith was doing some of those things in Tennessee, and they tried to do some of those things with him here in New England, but they just could never get it going consistently. And he felt like a gadget player, you know, Deebo Smith, that's a stable part of their offense. And maybe that's something this off season that they figure out, they're saying to themselves, I'm sure, hey, we can't, he's not going anywhere. We're paying him. We got to figure out how to use this money so that it shows up on game day. And so maybe that turns into three pitches, two screens, and, you know, I don't know, a couple of, you know, traditional running back handoffs a game, but they've just got to do more with him moving forward.
I'd be remiss. My podcast license pulled if I didn't ask you about the guy who's the most talked about person in New England the last few days, and that's Steve Belichick. Mm-hmm. Do we have a Steve Belichick problem, or is he still the same guy that coached the number one defense in football 2 years ago?
Everybody that I talk to that knows Steve Belichick loves Steve Belichick. And they tell me he is paid his dues, number one, but he is a real coach. This isn't just somebody who has ascended to this position just because of his dad. Obviously that doesn't hurt, right? I just wonder how that thing is structured, if it's sustainable moving forward, right? So that, you know, part of the roles may get ironed out without them doing anything at all this offseason, because Gerard Mayo may get hired and go somewhere else. But there is an interesting situation there, hierarchy there, where, you know, Bill obviously runs everything, but then it's Steve who calls the plays, but it's Gerard who's maybe more involved in the meetings. And then Matt Patricia's lurking somewhere a little bit off camera that, you know, but he's got real input and in real time, you know, he's in the coach's box during these games. So that to me is something that I think they need to figure out and give somebody some real authority there and make it one guy and give it to him. So if it's going to be Steve, let it be Steve's and let him have it, let him run with it. Feels like they're still kind of holding back a little bit there. And you know, I don't know if that's impacted the play calling or the play on the field or the attention to detail or what, but I think there is value in people understanding who's in charge. And, you know, outside of Bill, who obviously is in charge of everyone, you know, I think somebody, whether it's Mayo or Steve Belichick or Patricia, even, you know, let everybody know who the guy is and give him that responsibility. And so I don't think it's necessarily an issue, because at the end of the day, it is Bill Belichick's defense. And I think we've praised them all for years for the fact that they have hired from within, they've promoted from within, and that's worked for them for a long time. And they're trying to do it now. And obviously everything comes into question when they have an end of the year, like they just did. But that's a formula that Bill Belichick likes. It just so happens that one of his most important assistants shares his last name. And so he gets a little bit more scrutiny than anybody else would. So, you know, listen, but just like everybody else that's associated with that defense, Steve Belichick has a lot to prove next year too. Well, you know, everybody on that side of the ball, players, coaches, because what we saw, especially in that last game, I mean, that was it was historic in the wrong sense of the word. Mm-hmm. So they've got some stuff to figure out there.
Awesome. Well, Phil, you've been super generous with your time. We really appreciate it. You've always been great to me personally, and I loved having you on. Just real quick, where can people follow you, where they can find you on socials and your TV schedule and everything?
No doubt. Jerry, thanks for having me. Nick, thank you for having me. Great to talk to you guys. You can find all of my stuff at Phil A. Perry on Twitter. Same deal on Instagram. We've got everything there. So articles, a lot of our video that ends up online will end up there as well. And TV wise is going to be interesting moving forward here, because our football shows, we were doing the breakdown every week with Ted Johns. We just did our last episode on Monday night, but we'll have early edition night after night after night, 6 or 6:30, depending on the schedule. And then Boston Sports Tonight with Felger and Holly later got Celtics coming at you fast and furious, Jerry. I know you'll be tracking those guys. Oh, yeah. But I'm sure it doesn't stop. You know that as well as anybody. It does not stop. So we'll have free agency coverage, draft coverage, all that good stuff coming up here soon.
Okay, now we're going to be joined to play us out with the youngest member of the Perry family as your baby made Bill Belichick laugh. That was a golden moment. Thanks very much, Phil Perry. We will be back with another episode soon.
Olivia Perry, the real star of the Perry family, no doubt.
What goes into that decision for you and the staff? Sorry about the background noise there.
No worries. I can see you're multitasking here, so.
Not going real well. You can
tell. Yeah, we've all been there.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Damn. All right. And many, many more.
Many more to come. That's right.
Right. As we go forward and start chronicling all the Mac Jones banners yet to come. So
that's right.
Good. He's Nick Fasoli. I'm Jerry Thornton. Here's our guest, Phil Perry. Let's roll tape. Well, I want to first of all congratulate you, Phil Perry, because you know, the first episode of this we had your colleague Tommy Curran on. And so we got to talk to him before the season began. It was a time of hope and optimism and beautiful weather. And now we get to bring you in after this this football Fukushima. So you can throw on a hazmat suit, help us clean up this, the meltdown of this. And we can get into big picture, but your reaction to the game and what the source of that utter debacle was.
I wish I could tell you, Jerry. I think they wish they could tell you. It's really interesting talking to some of the players earlier this week and hearing them reference things like, you know, their mentality and that maybe the effort wasn't quite where it needed to be. And not that it was totally gone or evaporated, but it just hasn't, it didn't ratchet up to where they thought they needed it to be down the stretch. I don't know. It's hard to find anything to really grasp onto, to be honest. I thought towards the end of the regular season, you tell me, you know, what you thought. I felt like the end of the regular season was almost entirely self-inflicted stuff. You know, Josh Allen had a great game in that second game at Gillette Stadium, but that loss in Indy, blocked punt, offsides on a field goal, let him kick it again, interceptions, turnovers, the Miami game, same sort of stuff. And then the playoff game just felt like they were totally outclassed. Like, yeah, they made mistakes and they had self-inflicted wounds in that game too, but that one, they just really didn't have the horses. So I felt like it was almost two different problems at the end of the year. How did you look at this, though? Because I'm sure you were riding the wave and it was impacting you as much as it was anybody else.
Oh, yeah. They didn't have those moments of utter frustration where you're screaming at the screen because Lawrence Guy, who's a gamer, just decides to randomly like line up, head up on the center. And while Matt Judon is telling them to move and you give them a do-over, whatever, it wasn't that. The Buffalo game, both Buffalo games really looked to me as it wasn't about mental approach. It wasn't about scheme. I think they're just outclassed athletically, which is a problem, particularly on defense. I keep going back to that bomb that was completed over Jawan Williams. And it was nothing fancy about it. There were just two vertical routes and the post safety covers the inside guy and left Jawan Williams all alone. And, you know, Allen, you knew from before the snap, knew, okay, this is a touchdown and delivered a perfect ball. And I don't know that there's anything you can do schematically to stop that when you don't have guys who can keep up with receivers.
I think the secondary depth was something that was sort of lurking as something that could be their undoing all year long. And it just never happened, which, you know, credit to Jalen Mills, somebody who I killed all camp because I felt like he wasn't very good. And I thought it was going to be a disaster to have to start that guy on the outside. as your number two guy all year long. That's not even why they hired him. He was supposed to be sort of a jack of all trades. He ends up in that spot and they end up just fine. I mean, it wasn't like he had a great season, but they survived with him clearly out there. They ended up as a top five defense in a lot of different categories. So that eventually caught up with them, though. Trading Gilmore, losing Jonathan Jones, you know, Miles Bryant, as much as I like him and I think he might end up being a player, you know, he didn't make the team out of camp, Jerry, and he's a practice squad guy. And then they've got two more practice squad guys that are playing real snaps in a playoff game at the end of the year. I mean, against an offense like that one that is so built on the passing game and they loaded up on receivers to help Josh Allen, you can't keep up with what they had personnel-wise. So, you know, now we're all looking at it and it's, you know, it's panic in the moment, right, for Patriots fans. But now it feels like there's this residual panic of, well, how do you get this fit? They can't possibly fix all this in one offseason, can they? They just spent all their money. They don't really have any money to spend this offseason. And you've got guys that are good players that are scheduled to leave. So I think there's a, and this sort of tends to be how a lot of folks, I feel like, in our area experience their teams in general. But I think there is a lot of concern, even though there's certainly with Mac Jones and some other different parts of the team, there are parts of this team that you can look at and feel good about moving forward. Mm-hmm. I think big picture, there's still a lot of questions in terms of how you can kind of put the pieces back together to compete with the Bills. How do you think you'd be saying that anytime, Jerry?
No, I mean, the Bills had themselves convinced that they were at the beginning of a 10-year reign, and it certainly wasn't looking like that after the game and the category 5 wins or whatever. Just like, okay, well, the Patriots are still big and physical enough to dominate you. And now I just think right now, as these teams are currently constituted, the Pats can go out and have another top 3 defense next year again, because you can scheme stuff up over a 18-week, 17-game season. But until they solve the Buffalo problem, which I think we can shorthand as the Josh Allen problem, mm-hmm. that they're never going to see another home game in the playoffs. And, you know, you mentioned Miles Bryant. I don't want to put too much, like, you know, on his shoulders. He's a depth guy, but they relied on him in a major role. And, if I'm Isaiah McKenzie's agent and I see Bryant on the field next year, like, I'm putting a down payment on that boat that I was thinking about buying, because, you know, he's going to hit all the incentive clauses. And this guy who did nothing against anybody just tormented the Patriots for 2 games.
It's unbelievable. And he's a free agent. And our guy, our buddy Mike Giardi was on with us last night. He said, hey, that might be, you know, a relatively low cost option for the Patriots. And I agree. Wouldn't be a bad guy for them to try to go after. But if I'm his agent, I might be looking for a deal with like the Dolphins or even the Jets, just so you might have the opportunity to see Miles Bryant twice a year for the next 4 years. It's a difficult spot for them to be in, because I think they, like you said, for the vast majority of the season, you can scheme things up and you can put up some really good numbers against certain teams. But that was the other thing. And I sort of left out, okay, so they shoot themselves in the foot the last month of the regular season. They get totally outclassed talent wise in that wild card game. The other thing that happened and looms over all of those is that they just started playing better teams, Jerry. And that's how I felt at the end of the year, was that I had kind of been duped. I'd been a little bit duped by the run that they were on. And when they're the first seed in the AFC after beating Buffalo, man, I was sold on their toughness and their ability to not lose games themselves and not turn it over. Their turnover differential was great. It still ended up pretty good by the end of the year. They were still a top 10 team in that regard. And at the end of the season, it was like a lot of those things just went up in smoke. And so I think we can look at it now. Even Bill Belichick, you know, his final press conference with us, or his conference call with us, he basically said, and I thought it was some real candor on his part for him to say, I'm paraphrasing now, but it was essentially, you know, did we just have one bad night, or is that who we are? And I think a lot of us that watch this team really closely are still wondering the same thing. Are they that team? Are they actually that team that we saw at the end of the year in the playoffs when they played some good teams? Or are they the team that put up 50 on the Jets and the Jaguars? Odds are they're somewhere in the middle, right? I think it's just a question of side they're leaning more toward as they look at 2022.
Well, it's hard not to look back at the game against Tampa, when they were still figuring out who they are. And usually the first month of the season is kind of an extension of training camp here, because everything they do is more complicated and gets more complicated as they go. And you hit week four and you're saying, but feel pretty good about this. Like, look at what they did. I don't know that anybody did a job on Tampa that they did. Well, I guess the Jets game, you know, they picked off Brady a bunch of times, but I felt great about it. If you had told me then that they'd be utterly helpless against Buffalo twice, that they couldn't make a stop against Miami of all people, and that they would just get bullied by the Colts, I would have been stunned. And so I guess we look at the front seven and say, are they lacking athletes there? I mean, everybody's got Dante Hightower in their crosshairs right now, but you know, a guy whose skill set is kind of a between the tackles, big body thumper, who's utterly helpless when it's Josh Allen or even Tua. And so do they have to revamp that in addition to the secondary?
I think there are going to be a lot of places that you look to just upgrade athletically. But I say that now, Jerry, it's easy for us to say that now, just a few days after losing that game.
Right.
And where the team speed looked like it wasn't sufficient. Bill Belichick's been building this defense, you know, essentially the same way for a long, long time. And he's adapted and he's grown and he's changed. And you know, he has molded his scheme to the players that he has, you know, the big nickel package this year. And they've used it before, but, you know, they really leaned on it this year because three of his best players happen to be safeties. So that's something that he can do. But he has certain prototypes that he wants. And I'm not sure those are going to change. I think he looks at those positions and says, we need certain things out of those guys. He knows Dante Hightower's best role isn't to be in coverage snap after snap after snap.
Right.
This is the same. This is how the defense was built in 2016 and 2018, and offenses across the NFL are exploding, and the Patriots are drafting, you know, Juwan Bentley, who played at 260 pounds in college, and he was off teams' boards, undraftable, because he's too big. He wasn't athletic enough. Bill said, I don't care. That's what I want. I actually like those guys. Brandon Spikes, remember him? But yeah, that's who I want. I'm going to invest in those players. So I think it's easy for us to say that they're going to change how they do business on that side of the ball, but I'm not sure they're actually going to. Okay. I think they're going to use, you know, they're going to stick with the big bodies, and instead of putting them in coverage, use them to do what they do best. So if it's a passing situation, they're on the field, enter them into the pass rush, right? Like Kyle Van Noy and Dante Hightower, I think in 2018, they blitzed more than any linebacker, off the ball linebacker in football. It's because Bill doesn't want them necessarily in coverage. They have value to Bill, but if it's a passing down, he knows that's not their thing. He'd rather use safeties on backs. He'd rather use safeties on tight ends. But they got put in a weird spot, I think, against the Bills because they were down personnel-wise and because they were kind of flipping back and forth between man and zone. Nothing was working. And so they were trying to figure out a way to get pass rush. They couldn't do that. When they tried to put too many bodies into the pass rush or sacrificing bodies and cover, it was just, I don't know about you, Jerry, but what Josh Allen did in that game to me almost elevated him to like the elite level quarterback. I only say almost because he's still kind of inconsistent, but do you view him as like this untamable beast now moving forward, or is he still inconsistent enough for you that you look at it and say, well, if you just get Josh Allen on a couple of down days, you got a shot to be back in the driver's seat in this division?
Oh, there's a ton of recency bias going on here right now. You know what I mean? Like I saw him.
I'm guilty of it too.
Yeah. There's been one possession they've had in the last two games against New England where the Pats made a stop, and it was a turnover on downs. And so, you know, when
of a drop in the end zone.
Oh my God. I forgot about that. Okay. Yeah. When their punter doesn't need to throw his uniform in the hamper after the last two games, he can just like throw a little Febreze on it and put it back in his locker room. Then yeah, I'm going to look at Josh Allen as like he's arrived. He's this larger than life figure. And yeah, I think he's still capable of being forced into really dumb mistakes, but those are getting reduced all the time just by the sheer athleticism. I mean, you know, the second game against Buffalo, Christian Barmore had, he got credit for six pressures you didn't even notice them because every time they got in his face, he was throwing one of those across his body, middle of the field throws and finding somebody in the middle hole. So right now, I just think the entire division rests on their finding people with the athleticism to stop him. And I don't know if they're on the roster, which brings me to this might be a little bit obscure, but they've drafted a lot of linebackers in the last few years. 2 years ago, it was Anthony Jennings. He hasn't seen the field for them. This past year was Ronnie Perkins, right, in the third. And then late, they got the kid McGrone from
Cam.
Michigan.
Yep.
Cam McGrone. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, was highly valued, but then blew out his knee, I think. And right. So they redshirted him. Do you know enough about these guys to think, okay, there's the influx of, you know, sideline to sideline talent that they need somewhere in that mix?
I think McGrone could be that guy. He is a good athlete. He's explosive. He's not necessarily that huge, like, you know, I say huge. It used to be the standard, the 250-pound linebacker, right? The Ted Johnsons of the world. Mm-hmm. I get to work with that guy every week and have him throw me around. And now, you know, he would be, we've talked about this. I don't know where he'd probably be a first and second down linebacker in the league now, but he'd have to play for Bill, you know, I don't know if there's another defense out there that would take a Ted Johnson right now. So McGrone is a little bit smaller, a little bit more athletic. Perkins is actually more of an outside linebacker. They have this real glut of outside linebackers now that are relatively young that don't have a clear role on this team, Jerry. I mean, it's, you know, you've got Judon and Van Noy's under contract for next year. But then you had Winovich, who was inactive the other night.
Yep.
Uche, who's hardly played, even though he's healthy down the stretch. And then Ronnie Perkins plays the same position. So, you know, I don't know. Are they going to move on from Winovich? That wouldn't shock me, I guess, if they could somehow figure out a way to get some value back for him. But I don't know what you'd be getting for a guy like that. It just feels like they've overloaded there. And Jennings is more of their traditional bigger, heavier, not super athletic, but smart, off the ball linebacker. And he's pretty versatile too. They could play him on the edge too. And in his rookie year, he almost split 50-50 his snaps on the line and off. But I don't know what the long-term plan is for him either. So it's going to be really difficult for them to try to solve all of this in one off season. I'm not sure it's possible, Jerry, especially with, and we don't have to get into the weeds of free agency and the finances involved and all that, but they don't have much money. So If you're hoping they can trade for talent that costs money or buy talent in free agency and keep JC Jackson and, you know, keep whether it's Devin McCourty or James White or, you know, some of these other free agents that Trent Brown that are valuable pieces to this roster as we know it right now, you're going to have to make some difficult decisions and you might have some difficult releases to just try to clear up enough space just to maintain, never mind improve. So I think to me, it's another huge draft year. You know, because I think they're going to need several more. They got several this past year, so good for them. They're going to need several more young, cheap contributors in the draft this spring, in my opinion.
Yeah, you've really brought the room down. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry, Jerry.
Thanks a lot, Perry. No, I don't need your reality getting in the way of me trying to feel good about the, you know,
you got a quarterback.
The wreckage of
you
this.
Got a quarterback, Jerry. What did you think of the quarterback the other night?
You know what? Not an issue. You know what I mean?
Right.
He moved the ball to the extent he can. You had a great interception, great athletic play against him on a ball that maybe was a half a step underthrown. But, okay, I'm willing to accept. As a matter of fact, as you and I are talking, I'm in the middle of writing a blog about just all the things that the veterans on this team are saying about Jones. You know, from Matthew Slater to Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, guys who we thought, you know, some of them we thought were going to retire. Brandon Bolden, he's excited to come back. And to a person, they're all saying how good they feel about him. And all you had to do was Monday night watch Kyler Murray to know that that's a guy who the moment was too big for him. And I mean, emotionally, I'm not making a short joke, but I'll let the internet do
sure.
that.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know,
you're
just
sure not,
he
sure.
went into panic mode, and that right. never happened with Jones. And I my hope is that he's going to take you know, even a more elevated kind of leadership role. Kendrick Bourne said, oh, he'll get in my face. And I'm, you know, about a mistake I made or whatever. I'm all about it, you know, because it's all about team goals. Let do that. And I guys want to be led. And I think he'll have a, even a more moral authority, if you will, to lead them and kick some ass. And I think he's equipped for it. That's a total. If they had the same record this year with 2020 Cam Newton under center, I wouldn't feel nearly as good about this year. I think it was an illusion and they have a problem going forward. But are you with me that they've at least checked the box with Jones and got the major piece that they need?
No doubt. And I think maybe the most positive thing for Patriots fans to have taken away from this year in terms of things we've learned, I think it's Jones, but specifically his demeanor and his approach and his impact on his teammates, because some of the things we knew about him coming into the season, I'm not sure I knew how accurate he would be. He really all year long was among the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. So he was ahead of schedule on that as far as I was concerned, but we knew he was accurate and we knew he was smart and we knew he had an okay arm, but not a great arm. And we knew he was not a great athlete. So like physically, I'm not sure how much we learned about him, but we did learn he was, you know, this, I guess, checks a couple of physical boxes, tough and durable and character off the charts. And that was something that, you know, you could talk to as many people as you wanted who knew him back at Alabama or even before, or people who got to know him during the draft process. And people loved him in those settings, but until you see it day to day, week to week as a starting quarterback for an NFL team, it's hard to know how teammates are going to respond to you. And do you have that hard to discern factor where you are getting the respect from your teammates? And he clearly has passed that test with flying colors. So I think he's going to take a leap. I think that year one to year two leap is real, especially for quarterbacks. I think he's got a little bit more there physically than a lot of people. I think there's some, I really think, Jerry, that picture of him with the cigar and the shirt off has colored people's opinions of him forever. Because to me, what he did this year is not all that different from what Joe Burrow did last year. And nobody was saying about Joe Burrow last year, well, he's clearly not good enough and he's not going to be able to compete with the best of the best in the AFC. And look at Joe Burrow now. Add some pieces around him. Patriots are going to have to do that too for Mac Jones. Help him out as much as you can and then watch him go to work. And Joe Burrow's no great athlete. Joe Burrow doesn't have a cannon for an arm. He's accurate. He's tough. He's confident. He does a lot of the same things that Mac Jones does. He's smart. I don't know if Mac Jones would be sniffing the MVP conversation the way Joe Burrow is this year, because they're probably not going to be able to add a Ja'Marr Chase. But if you can add some talent around him, I don't know why you couldn't be Mac Jones sort of sniffing top 10 quarterback in the NFL territory. To me right now, he's somewhere around 14, 15. So he should get better next year and they should add around him to help him get better. And that to me is the biggest thing to hang your hat on as Patriots fans. You have that position figured out and that has to make you feel good to some extent, even though we're sifting through the wreckage of a very disappointing into 2021.
Here. Oh yeah, 100% Phil. Like you can go to a guy's pro day and watch him throw the route tree. You can have him at the combine and measure his measurables and how big his hand is. And you can interview him and try to look into his soul or whatever. But the X factor always remains, you know, what happens when the bullet's alive. And yeah, he made it through a 17, 18 game NFL season. He never once was taken off the field for ineffectiveness or injury. And I always felt like, you know, when people criticized how much talent he had around him in Alabama, I'm like, that to me is a positive, because he was able to command a huddle filled with alphas, you know, filled with future NFL talent. And there's a lot to be said for that. You know, when you're 23 and, you know, you're barking commands at, you know, a Hunter Henry or whatever, how will they respond? And he had experience doing that. So I'm all about it. Now, I'm glad you mentioned the wideouts thing. I'm not a huge wide receiver one guy. I've never been like, oh, you got to get that guy to stretch the field and take the top off a defense. And yet, because for 20 years, I watched a quarterback win championships without those guys. You know, it was always a Chris Hogan, a Danny Amendola, Troy Brown, you know, Deion Branch was really the best great receiver these guys had, who was a high draft pick. He was, mm-hmm. he was a second rounder. But now I feel like until they get that guy, you mentioned Jamar Chase, that kind of addition, who's going to make coordinators have to account for him. They don't have that guy right now. That you absolutely have to solve that problem and then if let it create other problems in the secondary. Are you with me on that? Or could they continue to roll out the crew that they have and expect Jones to win with them?
Well, they were an efficient offense this year, right? I mean, they're near the top of the league in terms of points scored for the vast majority of the season. I haven't probably checked it in 2 or 3 weeks, but their explosive play rate was really high. They actually led the league in explosive play rate. Now, a lot of those are catch and run plays. A lot of those are screens that go for 20 yards or more, but they were pretty efficient throughout the course of the year with the approach that they had. So I think they can continue to win that way. And it wouldn't shock me if Bill Belichick said, hey, we just couldn't stop Josh Allen for two straight games. If you think we're adding to the offense first thing in free agency or in the draft, you're cuckoo. We got to figure out that side of the ball. We're okay offensively. We've got an offense. We've got the core of our offensive line. We've got the quarterback. We've got a running game. The receivers they have are, you know, Jacoby Myers will have to be brought back on a restricted free agent deal, but that's low money. And you could run it back essentially with the same group and you should be okay. Maybe even a little bit better because they get more used to each other and Mac Jones improves and the chemistry gets better and all that. But I hesitate because when you look at the teams that are still left, Jerry, especially in this conference, they're all just kind of getting by on defense. Right. The teams that are the best teams are the elite teams offensively. So could you come back next year and have a good offensive team? Yes. But are you elite? Are you good enough to run with the Chiefs, run with the Bills, run with the Bengals on the scoreboard? Because those teams, they're just okay. You know, if you look at DVOA and they're, you know, I think there are positives and negatives to every metric, right? But DVOA is pretty widely used. The Patriots are number 4 defense in DVOA this year. The Bills were number 1. So, okay, maybe take them off the list. But the Bengals were 19th. The Chiefs, I think, were 24th. They're just getting by. And their offense is clearly carrying them. So that's why I look at all the holes defensively and I'm almost like, well, if you can't get it all figured out this offseason, why not just go and get a receiver at the end of the first round and see if you could turn Mac Jones into a Pro Bowl quarterback and see if that's enough. That to me would not be a bad approach. I know it might make Bill Belichick unhappy because he wants his defense to be among the best of the best, but I think it's going to be really hard to do that in one off season. Whereas if you give him one playmaker on the offensive side, you could take such a significant leap on that side that it kind of keeps you in contention with these other teams.
God, I can't believe that I'm feeling this one. Like I agree with everything you're saying. It's just, I've been so like conditioned to not care about wide receiver. And right. you look at the history of the first round and it's just littered with utter failures at that position. It's just a hard thing to project. And I mean, you know, let us never forget that DK Metcalf, who broke the combine, right, was the 64th pick. Like he was, the Patriots passed him over. Everybody passed him over once. And like I would give anything to get him right now.
Let me ask you this, as far as that position goes, because you mentioned Edelman and Amendola and Troy Brown, would you rather the true slot? Because Jacoby Myers has been good in the slot, but he's not that kind of guy. He's not the get open quickly guy. He's almost more of like a vertical route running. Not stretch the field, but he's more of like a developing route runner from the slot. Unlike, you know, Welker, who could get open, you know, a yard and a half from the line of scrimmage, no problem. Right. So would you rather see that guy, like the true slot, and then figure out another spot for Jacoby Myers? Or would you rather go for that, you know, big outside the numbers, one-on-one, throw him a jump ball type of
play? You know, now that we're a few days removed from that game, I'm more open to the idea of another Welker, Edelman type. Mm-hmm. But in the aftermath of that, watching like time and again, and this has happened a lot down the stretch, where they'd complete a ball to somebody and a defender is right on them because they're just, they're playing top down and, you know, no yards after the catch because they're not worried about the deep ball. My immediate thought was, okay, no, we need, you know, the Jamar Chase guy, you know, to just throw it up and he's going to win those battles. But yeah, listen, I've seen too many guys here get 1,000-yard seasons because they were really good in space and moving the chains. And so, yeah, if you could get me 2007 to 2009 Wes Welker, I think I'd take that. But
yeah,
because this is still the same offense and we've got a hyper accurate quarterback who maybe doesn't have, you know, the biggest arm in the world. So, but will that help you compete with Kansas City and Buffalo and in a perfect world, Green Bay or Tampa?
Right. Right. I mean, it could, right. Cause if you're just moving the chains constantly, you know, that works too. That's it, you know, and that actually chews up some clock, which, you know, Bill Belichick loves, as opposed to, you know, scoring on one play and get your defense back on the field. I think honestly, it wouldn't be a bad idea to look for both. You know, and I don't know how highly you invest in either one. Usually those slot receivers, you don't have to draft all that highly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one guy, Elijah Moore, who's now the Jets, who was going to be a second round pick, you know, if not a late first, all off season long. Everybody knew it. You know, okay, for somebody with that kind of physical ability, you might have to invest early. But Slade Bolden, the slot receiver for Alabama right now, you know, you could get him pretty late probably in the draft. And then maybe, you know, you figure out another way to get your bigger guy on the outside. I just think Nelson Agholor, to me, was a little bit of a disappointment. He wasn't quite on the Jonnu Smith level of disappointment, Jerry, but to get 37 catches, I think is what it was from him. Curran, you know, compared to Philip Dorsett at one point in time, you know, like that's a lot of money for a Philip Dorsett type of impact.
Right.
So that, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they're looking to upgrade there.
You know, you just struck a nerve in Nick Fasoli. By one of the guys you just mentioned. Nick, are you chiming in here with your weekly question about your guy?
What do you got, Nick?
I got to ask you, Phil. I've asked every single guest we've had on this podcast their thoughts about Jonnu Smith. You kind of just went into it. Obviously, year one of Jonnu, he was unbelievable before he came to New England, and now he almost looks like he took a vacation year. But what are your thoughts going into season two? I think – hopefully he comes out of the weeds and we're going to see more double tight end sets with more passing instead of him running or semi-run blocking. But I don't know.
It's shocking, isn't it, that he essentially turned into like Daniel Graham, basically, by the end of the year. You know, he was a total non-factor in the passing game. You know, they use him as a run blocker and he can move and he can, you know, he's a good athlete down the field at the line of scrimmage. I thought it was interesting a few weeks ago, Nick. Josh McDaniels called it a foundational year for Jonnu Smith. I said, uh-oh. that's a nice way of putting it. But he's essentially saying there, without saying it, he's still picking things up. He's still trying to get comfortable. And I think for the next however many years, he will always be there for the Patriots. And maybe they won't do it while he's still on the roster. But if there's ever a case to be made that a guy probably could have benefited from showing up to the optional spring workouts, it would have been him.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And the one camp that he did come to, he had to go to, was mandatory mini camp. He got hurt basically the first 5 minutes of the first practice. So he essentially, the entire spring was a wash and it was like he never caught up. And to me, the disappointing thing for him is he's a good athlete. They had to scheme everything up just to get his hands on the football. And when they tried to throw it to him down the field, he looked lost. And I don't know if he needs a new set of prescription contacts. He needs some LASIK surgery, or it was like he couldn't track the football. You would see him sort of trying to, and then having to backpedal and then having the thing still sail 5 yards over his head. You know, we all remember the pick six against the Saints early that season, but I think that was just the most glaring of what was an issue all year long, which was he's uncomfortable being thrown the football down the field. And yeah, you're really limited in what you can do with a guy when that's the case. And I don't know how you get more comfortable, if it's just reps or what, but I think eventually they said, well, we clearly can't trust him as a down the field passing option. So if we want to get it into his hands, because he's a good athlete, it's got to be on a handoff or a screen, right? I mean, all of his catches essentially at the end of the year were little like tear screens or bubble screens. Or so he's got a lot of work. He's not going anywhere, Nick.
You know, I know. Trust me. I know.
It sounds like you were high on him before the season started. Like a lot of us were.
Yeah.
And they ended up
in recent weeks as well. He just keeps waiting for that breakout.
Waiting for the pop. Yeah.
He popped out for the Titans game. That's all I got to say. He came out a little bit and then it was a groundhog day.
Yeah. He became Cordarrelle Patterson basically only with one jet sweep a game that went for 3 yards. Like it was always on a first and 10. He'd get 3 yards and you're like, all right, well, take the rest of the day off.
You know what?
Who's this tight end that they had the second tight end they had opposite Gronk for a couple of years when they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl? He'd come out of India. I'm flaking on his name, but he was literally going
Dwayne Allen.
He was getting like two catches a season. And it was astonishing. Like nobody can make a tight end appear or disappear the way the Mick offense can.
Oh, you know what though? You just brought up an interesting name, Patterson. They do have these hybrid players are everywhere now, right? Like Debo Samuel, who is a stud.
And unbelievable.
Johnny Smith can be Debo Samuel, but they manufacture touches for him. It's screens, it's short passes into the flat, let him run with it. It's handoffs, it's pitches. I mean, Johnny Smith was doing some of those things in Tennessee and they tried to do some of those things with him here in New England, but they just could never get it going consistently, and he felt like a gadget player. You know, Debo Smith, that's a stable part of their offense, and maybe that's something this offseason that they figure out. They're saying to themselves, I'm sure, hey, we can't, he's not going anywhere, we're paying him, we got to figure out how to use this money so that it shows up on game day. And so maybe that turns into three pitches, two screens, and you know, I don't know, a couple of, you know, traditional running back handoffs a game, but they've just got to do more with him moving forward.
I'd be remiss. My podcast license pulled if I didn't ask you about the guy who's the most talked about person in New England the last few days, and that's Steve Belichick. Do we have a Steve Belichick problem, or is he still the same guy that coached the number one defense in football 2 years ago?
Everybody that I talk to that knows Steve Belichick loves Steve Belichick. And they tell me he is paid his dues, number one, but he is a real coach. This isn't just somebody who has ascended to this position just because of his dad. Obviously, that doesn't hurt, right? I just wonder how that thing is structured, if it's sustainable moving forward, right? So that, you know, part of the roles may get ironed out without them doing anything at all this offseason, because Gerard Mayo may get hired and go somewhere else. But there is an interesting situation there, hierarchy there, where, you know, Bill obviously runs everything, but then it's Steve who calls the plays, but it's Gerard who's maybe more involved in the meetings. And then Matt Patricia's lurking somewhere a little bit off camera that, you know, but he's got real input and in real time, you know, he's in the coach's box during these games. So that to me is something that I think they need to figure out and give somebody some real authority there and make it one guy and give it to him. So if it's going to be Steve, let it be Steve's and let him have it, let him run with it. Feels like they're still kind of holding back a little bit there. And you know, I don't know if that's impacted the play calling or the play on the field or the attention to detail or what, but I think there is value in people understanding who's in charge. And, you know, outside of Bill, who obviously is in charge of everyone, you know, I think somebody, whether it's Mayo or Steve Belichick or Patricia, even, you know, let everybody know who the guy is and give him that responsibility. And so I don't think it's necessarily an issue, because at the end of the day, it is Bill Belichick's defense. And I think we've praised them all for years for the fact that they have hired from within, they've promoted from within, and that's worked for them for a long time. And they're trying to do it now. And obviously everything comes into question when they have an end of the year, like they just did. But that's a formula that Bill Belichick likes. It just so happens that one of his most important assistants shares his last name. And so he gets a little bit more scrutiny than anybody else would. So you know, listen, but just like everybody else that's associated with that defense, Steve Belichick has a lot to prove next year too. Well, you know, everybody on that side of the ball, players, coaches, because what we saw, especially in that last game, I mean, that was it was historic in the wrong sense of the word. Mm-hmm. So they've got some stuff to figure out there.
Awesome. Well, Phil, you've been super generous with your time. We really appreciate it. You've always been great to me personally, and I loved having you on. Just real quick, where can people follow you, where they can find you on socials and your TV schedule and everything?
No doubt. Jerry, thanks for having me. Nick, thank you for having me. Great to talk to you guys. You can find all of my stuff at Phil A. Perry on Twitter. Same deal on Instagram. We've got everything there. So articles, a lot of our video that ends up online will end up there as well. And TV wise is going to be interesting moving forward here, because our football shows, we were doing the breakdown every week with Ted Johns. We just did our last episode on Monday night, but we'll have early edition night after night after night, 6 or 6:30, depending on the schedule. And then Boston Sports Tonight with Felger and Holly later. Got Celtics coming at you fast and furious, Jerry. I know you'll be tracking those guys. Oh, yeah. But I'm sure it doesn't stop. You know that as well as anybody. It does not stop. So we'll have free agency coverage, draft coverage, all that good stuff coming up here soon.
Okay, now we're going to be joined to play us out with the youngest member of the Perry family as your baby made Bill Belichick laugh. That was a golden moment. Thanks very much, Phil Perry. We will be back with another episode soon.
Olivia Perry, the real star of the Perry family, no doubt.
What goes into that decision for you and the staff? Sorry about the background noise there.
No worries. I can see you're multitasking here, so.
Not going real well, you can tell.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, Jerry, so obviously the season sadly came to an end, but that doesn't mean the voicemails haven't. So we have one last week of caller voicemails right now. So here we go.
And we struck a motherload of these things, right?
We did.
A dozen of them or more. All right, bring it on. Let's hear from people. Let's try to talk someone down off the ledge.
Here we go.
Hey guys, it's Mike from 30 Rows Up podcast. Disappointing end to the 2021 season yesterday. I actually took the drive up to Buffalo, 26-hour round trip. Great experience, but the game itself, it was over before it started. I think the defense is still on the tarmac down at TF Green Airport. I think the Patriots in the offseason, Bill's going to have a vengeance. He's going to have a fire lit under him. Same with Mac. They need a true number one receiver and to overhaul the linebacking crew. And I think Mac is going to step up as a great leader next this offseason and next year, and he should bring the receivers to Alabama, give them the Tom Brady treatment. All right, just disappointing end to the season again. Peace.
Oh, man, can you imagine going 26 hours round trip to watch them give up touchdowns on the first seven possessions? You know what? Not since the Donner Party has anyone traveled further to have a worse result than him. So I agree with everything you said, though. Yep, they've got to get younger and more athletic at linebacker. I do think they need an upgrade at receiver. And Jones is the real deal. And, yeah, Belichick is not done harvesting souls, not by a damn stretch.
All right, so here's number two.
So if Jimmy Garoppolo's available at the end of the season, do the Pats get him? Hmm?
Yeah, I love me some Jimmy G. They don't need him. They don't need him at $25 or $27 million mm-hmm. A year. And I'm pulling for him. I appreciate how well he played, whatever. But they've got the answer at quarterback. Yeah. He's for short money. I disagree with Colin Cowherd, who said now's the time to move on from Mac Jones. Do you have any desire to see Garoppolo come in here?
No, I mean, would I have wanted Jimmy G before Cam Newton? 100%. But now I think we're years ahead of where we wanted to be, and I think bringing Jimmy back is just pointless.
Yeah, that problem got solved with the 15th pick in the 2021 NFL draft. The Patriots select it. Yeah, so move on. We'll sign Garoppolo to a one-day contract when he retires. Yeah, but for now, no need for it.
Here's our next guy, caller number 3.
So my biggest takeaway from the Patriots season is that they have a strong foundation with their offense, especially with their rookie Mac Jones. And I think the best thing that's going to happen to Mac Jones is that he's going to have a full off season to grow, and he's going to be a lot better in year two. And I think people need to look out, because the Patriots are going to be on their way back to glory sooner than you think.
So, Jared, I want to start this one off real quick by saying I totally agree with this guy, because coming into this past season and having Mac Jones as well as he played this entire season, he played almost 2 straight years of football nonstop. Mm-hmm. Didn't get a break. And now he's finally going to have an offseason without having to train intensely, obviously, before the NFL draft, going in straight to minicamp essentially, and then going right into a season. So we're finally, maybe some rest is going to do him well.
Yep, 1,000%. And, you know, for most of that training camp and all through preseason, he was playing with the twos. And so now he's going to get the lion's share of the reps. He doesn't have to share them with anybody. And, and what's 13 plus 18, that's what, 31 games that he's played since September of last year. So, I'm all about that. I agree 100%. He's going to come back better next year than he was this year. And this year was pretty frigging good for a rookie.
Agreed. Our next caller number 4, Tom O'Shea.
Hey, this is Tom O'Shea, your lovely Patriots fan in the state of Illinois. So my takeaway from this is that, yes, we didn't go far in the postseason, and yes, we got our butts kicked to us in the wild card round. But if you would have told me, like, literally after that, or literally at the beginning of the season, or especially after that Cowboys game, that we would rattle off 7 wins in a row and basically get into the postseason, I would have took them that. There's stuff that needs to be done during the offseason, like defense-wise, but at the same time, I'm kind of proud of a little bit how this team went gone, especially just So anyway, so thanks for what you guys did for the show this year. So look forward to listening on moving forward. Thanks. Bye.
I agree. And listen, I had to explain this to the Irish Rose during that game, because she was like, this is awful. It's a trouble. You know, like, everything you're saying is correct. But you know what's really awful was where we were last year, out of the playoffs, with no idea who the quarterback was going to be. People throwing around names like Marcus Mariota, whatever. You know, maybe they can get a Ryan Tannehill. Carson Wentz is available. Like, you know, first world problem to have is, you know, in a rebuilding year, you got blown out of a playoff game. So, he's 100% right. This is not the best case scenario, but it's damn close to the best thing we could have hoped for this year. In the playoffs, a lot to work on, but all the pieces are in place.
Couldn't agree more. All right, our next guy is Nick from Charlestown.
Hey, boys. Nick in Charlestown here. I just want to say thanks for riding out the season with us. It's been a doozy, especially after that horrible night on Saturday, but it's time to look forward to, you know, the off season. So with that being said, what do you guys think? Will we have any major off season free agent signings or trades? And if so, what position do you think it's going to be at? Can't wait to hear you guys next season. Go Pats. Cilantro.
Appreciate it. Well, you know, Phil Perry addressed this a little while ago, and it was a great point to say, they don't have a ton of money to spend. So we're probably going to have to get used to the idea that some very familiar names are going to be moved on from. I mean, last year was the rare season in which they didn't have a ton of cuts where you said, oh my God, what are they going to do without this guy? You know, Dante Hightower may not be back. Devin McCourty may not be back.
You know who I was thinking while Phil was saying that? And I hate to say it because of how he came back for us this year and then got sadly injured, but I think James White is gone.
Could be. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I thought him coming back this year was sort of a pleasant surprise.
Me too.
And when he went down, it kind of felt like, all right, you know what, this is, this could be the end of the line. I would be sorry to see him go.
Mm-hmm. Then you have Ramondre and Harris step up in the ways they did, and then you have good old BB Hulk Smash coming back in his, what, 30th year in the NFL? And yeah. Now he's playing like he's a brand new James White. So, I mean, sadly, I don't want to see James go, but he'll probably go join the Buccaneers with Brady next year.
Yeah, I thought he was going to sign with Miami, but now that Brian Flores is out, you can probably forget that. So, yeah, in order to sign people in, I think the priorities are going to remain defensive back, front seven on defense, and then receiver. But
yeah,
those are things they can also address through the draft. But yeah, look, in order to sign players, you're going to have to expect to cut players. This is not the 2021 off season. This is a whole new year, and they don't have them because they spent it all last year.
Yep. All right. So we got another one. This is a longer guy, but here we go.
Hey, Jerry, me and my friends drove 7 hours, to that shit show on Saturday, drove from Concord to Buffalo. Got great seats though, cause I guess Bill's Mafia, you know, they didn't want to sit on the 50. So we did. But listen, I gotta tell you, that was up there with the worst beatings I've ever seen, certainly in person. But I don't know if it changes my season outlook too much. You know, I think this Patriots team did just about as well as I expected them to. Certainly, I didn't expect them to get beat that bad. But if we're being honest, I think that Bills team is just built better than we are right now. And the biggest thing is Josh Allen. Just, we didn't have the type of defense that you need to stop them, you know. Hightower is not quick enough. Judon fell off a cliff. We just didn't have it. On another note, Bills Mafia are a lot meaner than I thought they would be. I always thought of them as lovable losers, but once they start winning, they get vicious. Let me tell you that. But they said the name Tom Brady more than any other one, including Josh Allen. So I guess we'll still take that as having some mental real estate. But really, I think we just got to take the positives from this season, and I think Mac's the guy. But certainly some restructuring to do on defense. Something I'd throw out, Vic Fangio now available. Do the Pats bring him as a DC, a named DC? Haven't had that in a while. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you think about that. So, yeah.
I agree with everything he said, except I didn't know that Bills Mafia would be hostile, nasty drunks. I mean, they always strike me as the kind of drunks that, you know, will throw their arm around your shoulder and, you and me, buddy, against the world, you know, and like a lot of hugs and, you know, maybe a couple happy tears. But listen, they're feeling it. It's been 20 years of frustration and they don't know how long this is going to last. So yeah, they're going to feel it. The Vic Fangio thing, the Pats brought in an outside coordinator one time, and I'm flaking on who it was. It was Dom Capers, right? He was in as like a consultant or whatever. He was one and done. Like, they bring guys up who know this system, offense and defense. It's a bottom up system, and they're not going to bring in a guy to reinvent the wheel. Nor do I want them to. I would rather have someone who's familiar with what Belichick wants to do and grew up in this system than an outside guy. You feel the same way?
Couldn't agree more. I mean, they do have to name a DC, I think. They need to figure out that position, like, well, Phil and you discussed in the main pod, but I mean, it's going to come towards the regular season, I think. And we're going to see where Donta goes. I mean, not Donta, where
Gerard Mayo goes.
Gerard Mayo goes.
I wouldn't hate him taking the reins. I really wouldn't. Look, and if Brian Flores could somehow become available, and that's a big ask because he's going to get hired. There's 7 openings as we speak. Mm-hmm. There's rumors that Cliff Kingsbury might be on the chopping block. That's a lot of mm-hmm. potential landing spots for him. But, you know, if it was, Flores would be best case scenario for me, but failing that, I don't think their problem was schematic. I think it's a talent gap, and that's what they have to close. And nobody was going to prevent those touchdowns with the defensive backs that they rolled out there. Just nobody.
I don't disagree. All right, here's our next guy.
Hey, Jerry, Alex, Pats fan from Kentucky here. I just want to say first that I love the podcast. You guys do a great job, and I loved your book, Six Rings, and particularly From Darkness to Dynasty. As I'm sitting here at my kitchen table looking at the funeral flowers my asshole friends who are Bengals fans sent me with the note, sorry for your loss, two-day loser. I'm really happy. I think we showed a lot of progress this season. Last season, you know, was a very down year. Not for lack of trying, but, you know, it was a rough time. And year two, post-Brady, you know, we're in the playoffs again. And I think that's great. You see a lot of teams that are just constantly rebuilding for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And, you know, we're right back in the thick of things. So nowhere to go but up from here. And I think that's great. Again, love the podcast and all the work you guys do. Thanks.
First of all, I love the move by the Bengals fan. That's so vicious, you know. It's better than what I got. I opened up my DMs recently. I didn't know that just, you know, people couldn't just chime in if they wanted to. So I hear from this Bills fan all the time now who in the fourth quarter was like, ha ha, From Darkness to Dynasty, you suck. And then he told me, to tuck my sister. And I think that was a typo. Literally told me, go tuck your sister. But yeah, I love the move. I'm with him on that. It's in terms of, you know, where this team is at, how they're positioned to get better. Because look at last year's top 20 in the draft, or top 10, and look at how many names are back there again. Jacksonville has the number one pick for the second year in a row. The Jets had the number two pick. They've got the number four. Detroit has the number two. So rebuilds take forever. This one was a huge step forward, and it's only been two seasons since they lost Brady. So yeah, feel good about that.
Agreed. All right, here's our next one. And I don't know, he didn't give his name. So this is number, I think, 10.
First time, long time, guys. Hey, I think the season was a success. Mac Jones is the future. I am a little worried about Jake Bailey, though. You know, should we reevaluate and looking for a punter? Going to go ahead and hang up and listen. Love the show.
All right, Nick, you handle this because you were on board with the guy that Alex Barth told us about, like super punter, or what's his name?
So I forget his name exactly, but he's one of the best punters coming out of this draft. And honestly, like what Alex brought up in the podcast, one, we've never re-signed a punter after their initial contract. And two, especially with those last, I'd say his last two games coming out, obviously there's been more work on him, I think. So he's been punting more often than not. And it hasn't been great. So I don't think the road that Jake Bailey's been heading down in the last couple games is leading him to a strong, I'd say, reason for a new contract. So I don't want to say it's the end of Bailey because he's been great for us, but it's probably coming to it.
Oh, yeah. The punt god. That's his name. And he's from San Diego State.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know what? Alex had me when he first started to describe him. And then, you know, the fact that you already were on, he was on your radar. That
he's a famous on TikTok.
Yeah, but when I found out he's a lefty, that was it. Like, pure Patriot guy. And listen, Bailey is a symptom of a larger problem. Like, their special teams lost the battle so many times this year. And we're just not used to them not being the better of the two units on the field. But so many mistakes, so many cell phones. And Joe Judge is out of work. So, you know, if they were to bring him back to clean this shit up, I think I'd be all about that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And last but not least, our favorite guy, ending us off on season one of Do Your Pod, good old Steve from Weymouth.
My man.
Hey guys, Steve from Weymouth here. I know it's early in the week. I'm jacked up for the postseason. I'm excited. I got some coffee in me. One quick comment I got to make. I don't know if you saw it. Bart Scott recommending Josh Allen to take Viagra. You kidding me? Pat by 35 at least. Easy enough. Easy. They got to take dick pills to try to get ready for the cold weather. It makes sense. Open up circulation. But come on. No way. Bill don't need it. He's like, you know, he's old. He don't need it. He's good. So let's go, Pat. Huh? Let's go, Pat.
Oh, we owe Steve a debt. Like I'm telling you, I'm gonna find him. I'm gonna give him a beer. That magnificent Wildcat, Weymouth Hills 02190. I love the theme among all these guys. Now that we've had a couple of days to ruminate on this, you can feel bad about the Bills game, but overall, anyone who thinks that this year wasn't a success just hasn't been paying attention. Just has no sense of what
you're
it
not
takes.
A football fan.
Yeah, exactly. You think that you've just been, you know, given this divine right to compete for Super Bowls every year. It's a process. Yeah. As by the way, Nick, was this project that you and I started. This was also a process. We were growing and learning with the team. You were rookie of the year for sure. And it's been a lot of fun. You and I have talked, and we'll tell the listeners now, we really have a game plan going forward. Probably not an every week podcast, but you good with us going in every few weeks, once a month? Okay.
Yeah, the viewers, we're not going to go away. You'll hear from us. Old Balls is going to stay behind the mic and not just on the pen and paper anymore.
I love it. And actually, it's a quill pen and it's parchment. You know, to go along with my swing line manual typewriter. No, it's been a blast. I wanted to do a podcast just to do it, just as an outlet and to talk to interesting people. We've had phenomenal guests, so many guys in the media and comedy and women like former radio host. And I'd asked them to come on and they were only too happy to do it and contributed just a ton. So deepest gratitude to everyone who has listened. We will be back in a few weeks, whether we do like a post playoff wrap up or start previewing free agency, the combine, the draft. It never stops. As I've said to you before, Nick, the most popular sport in America is the NFL season.
That's right.
The second most popular is the NFL off season. And the Patriots have a lot of work to do as we learned. And what are you going to be working on going forward now that you're, you know, became a full-time Barstool employee under my tutelage?
Obviously, any stoolies out there, you'll be able to check me out, check out all the work that I do inside of HQ on. I'm on Stool Scenes. I'm one of the main videographers and editors for the show. And I do Call Him Poppy with David Ortiz and many other shows here at Barstool Sports. So my camera work and my fingers have touched just about many things that go out on the daily.
Well, damn proud to know you, and can't wait to get together and have beers in person. And if you've listened this long, please, you know, feel free to give us a rating. I guess that matters. Like, share, and subscribe, or don't. This is America. I'm not going to tell you what to do. This is Do Your Part. It's not some fascist dictatorship, but we appreciate the support. And all the voicemails and whatever. We'll be back really soon. Maybe just me and Nick. Maybe with a guest, we'll figure this out. All right. So he's Nick Fasoli. I'm Jerry Thornton. This has been Do Your Pod, wrapping up the 2021-22 season. We'll be back soon. Sláinte.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley.
For the love of home.